Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the PION AG conference call on the financial results of 2018, hosted by Dr. Wolfgang Wirngen and Abdelghany Omari. For the duration of the call, you will be on listen only. However, at the end of the call, you will have the opportunity to ask questions. If at any time you need assistance, please press star zero on your telephone keypad and you will be connected to an operator. I am now handing you over to Ralf Penner to begin today's conference. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much for your kind introduction. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us for PION's earnings call on the financial results of 2018. My name is Ralf Penner. I am PION's Vice President, Investor Relations, and I'll be moderating today's call. I am joined by Wolfgang Wirngen, PION CEO, as well as Abdelghany Omari, our Chief Financial Officer. Within the next half hour, we are going to highlight some of the 2018 achievements, give details on the financial results, highlight the most important events, and provide a pipeline and strategy update and a financial outlook. After this initial presentation, we'll be happy to take questions. I would like to point out that the slides for the presentation can be accessed by webcast in parallel to this conference call. The webcast details have been posted on our website and were also given in today's press release. If you have not already opened the webcast link, you may want to do so now. This conference call is being recorded and the replay will be available later today and will be posted on our website. Before we get started, I would like to remind you that today's call may include forward-looking statements and that actual results may vary from PION's current anticipations. I would also like to refer to the disclaimer included in the presentation slides. An Hinweis für die deutschen Teilnehmer. Als international operierendes Unternehmen halten wir die Präsentation in englischer Sprache. Wir möchten den deutschen Teilnehmern am Ende jedoch die Möglichkeit geben, ihre Fragen auch in Deutsch zu stellen, die wir dann auch in Deutsch beantworten werden. After these initial remarks, I believe that we should now start right on with the presentation. Wolfgang, please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Ralf. Hello, everybody on the phones. I'd like to start with a brief corporate overview for those who are not familiar with the company. We're a specialty pharma company with focus on sedation anesthesia based on our lead compound and only compound in the company, remimazolam. We already have eight regional partnerships for this. We are very virtually organized, so we have 39 people on average, headquartered in Aachen, but we also have an office in Cambridge, U.K. We had 17.2 million cash and cash equivalents at hand at the end of the year, and our market capitalization fluctuates around 140 million. We have the typical German structure of a two-tiered board. Our chairman, Mr. Spiekerkötter, is with the company now for more than 10 years. The management team consists of three people, including Jürgen Beck, who's not on the phone, and Abdel, who will talk later on in the presentation. We're listed on the Frankfurt Stock Exchange, as I said before, market cap fluctuating around 140 million. The liquidity has slightly increased compared to whole year 2018, but we hope to still have a better performance on this going forward after the filing, maybe in the U.S. On the next slide, please. You will now see a video that we have recently put online. For those who are not familiar with remimazolam, I think that's a very crisp introduction to the drug, what it can deliver, and why it's so appealing.
A growing number of interventions performed under sedation or anesthesia are carried out worldwide. While sedation and anesthesia are mostly well-tolerated, a more careful approach is required for very young, very sick, and elderly patients. The currently used drugs have various downsides, leading to either efficacy, efficiency, or safety issues, impacting the predictability of procedure and recovery times. PION's remimazolam is a first-in-class, ultra-short-acting, intravenous benzodiazepine drug. Remimazolam quickly reaches the brain, ensuring rapid onset of sedation or anesthesia. It is degraded to inactive metabolite to prevent a hangover effect associated with other benzodiazepines. Unlike for some currently used drugs, a reversal agent is available for remimazolam, adding an important safety feature. As a result, fewer supervising personnel are needed both during and after an intervention. With remimazolam, the depth of sedation and anesthesia can be easily controlled, which allows its use for all three major indications. First, in general anesthesia, which requires a deep level of sedation for up to several hours. Second, for ICU sedation, where a medium level of sedation is maintained for several days or even weeks. Third, for light procedural sedation, applied for a short period of time, usually up to 30 minutes. Remimazolam has shown positive results in clinical studies with more than 2,300 adult volunteers and patients. Learn more at PION.com.
Well, let me take it up with the three indications, which is on the next slide. We assume a peak potential for each of those three indications of around $500 million, which is based on prediction of our partners and our own market research. In two indications, we are in, we already have filings, one in general anesthesia in Japan, procedural sedation in China, and we are working, as you know, with Cosmo to bring in the next filing in the U.S. in very short time from now. ICU sedation, we have not done a full development program, but this is on the agenda for the future. Let me have a brief recap of 2018, which we started with the scientific advice of the EMA with regard to our phase 3 trial, which we then started in the middle of last year, and which is on target, on time, according to our planning, and we assume this will be completed by the end of the year. So towards the end of the year, we saw the first filing by Yichang Yongwell in China, and then in December, Mundi Pharma submitted the NDA for general anesthesia. Unfortunately, this also coincided with Brexit discussions, so we didn't see what we had hoped for in the reflection of our share price. I also would like to take a few seconds to briefly go through the remimazolam history, which we acquired in 2008. We saw the first phase 3 completed already in the same year, phase 2 in 2010. In 2015, we started remimazolam in procedural sedation in the U.S. and general anesthesia in Europe. And if you now look back and see that for procedural sedation, the EMA gave us feedback that we can file for procedural sedation in Europe based on the U.S. data, see that all of a sudden timelines get compressed. It has been a long ride, but I'm very pleased where we are at this moment in time. We have two filings under the belt. We are waiting the third filing in very short time, and the German anesthesia trial is well underway. For those who are not so familiar with the space, sedation and anesthesia is a continuum. So the change from deep sedation to general anesthesia is a critical one, because at general anesthesia level, with many drugs, there is also a loss of the ventilation. So there is inadequate ventilation. For remimazolam, we can claim that even at levels of sedation of general anesthesia, many patients maintain their spontaneous breathing capacity. What is also not known to many people is that anesthesia is usually, and also in sedation, this is the case, in many cases, it has to be a combination of analgesia, so like an opioid, like remifentanil or fentanyl, and hypnosis, drugs like midazolam, propofol or remimazolam, and then in certain cases you also add a neuromuscular blocker in order to prevent the patient to move involuntarily while he is under general anesthesia. So why are we so excited about remimazolam? The point is that we have been told right from the start that it looks like this drug combines the best of both worlds. meaning it is as short as propofol, meaning that this allows to do more patients in the same period of time. On the other hand, it is as safe as a benzodiazepine, which means that there's a good chance that not in many cases for procedural sedation, no anesthesiologist will be required to attend the procedure, which in many situations in European hospitals allows interventionalists to speed up and increase the number of procedures that they can do. I'd now like to hand over to Abdel to give you an overview about the financials. Thank you very much, Abdel.
Thank you, Wolfgang. Good afternoon, everyone. Ladies and gentlemen, I will now guide you through the financial key figures for 2018, compared with the previous year, and also give an outlook for fiscal year 2019. Let me start with selected items of the P&L. Revenues amounted to 2.8 million euros and mainly resulted from the license agreements with Mundi Pharma in Japan, Hana Pharm in South Korea, and Yichang Yumwell in China. Thereof, approximately 2 million euros resulted from the Japanese license agreement, namely 1 million euros upfront payment received in January 2018 and 1 million euros milestone payment for the filing in Japan in December 2018. Another 0.5 million euros in connection with the filing in Japan were received from Hana Pharm. Revenues from Yichang Yumwell in connection with the filing in China amounted to 250,000 euros. Revenues of 5.8 million euros in 2017 were mainly realized in connection with the license agreement with Cosmo. On the upper right-hand side, you can see that research and development expenses amounted to 12.2 million euros, which is a decrease of 5.7 million euros compared to 2017. The R&D expenses mainly related to the European Phase 3 study in general anesthesia, the validation of commercial-scale production, and preparatory activities for filings of remimazolam. The decrease compared to the prior year mainly results from lower costs for Phase 3 and particularly Phase 1 studies. General administrative and selling expenses amounted to 3.4 million euros and decreased by 0.4 million euros compared to the previous year. This essentially relates to a decrease of selling expenses in the amount of 0.4 million euros to 0.4 million in 2018. This is mainly due to lower expenses for market research activities. In total, a net loss of 9.9 million euros was incurred compared to a net loss of 12.1 million euros in 2017. Now let's move to the balance sheet and an overview of headcount. The total assets decreased by 7.6 million euros compared to end of 2017. While the tax credit claim is lower than in previous year, due to lower R&D expenses, and trade receivables are higher than end of 2017, since the milestone payments from the filing in Japan, totaling 1.5 million euros, were not received in 2018 yet, but in the beginning of 2019. The decrease of total assets mainly results from a reduction of cash and cash equivalents. As you can see on the upper right-hand side, cash decreased by 7.6 million euros compared to end of 2017. This reduction stems especially from negative cash flows from operating activities of 12.8 million euros on the one hand, and positive cash flows from financing activities of 5.2 million euros on the other hand. Cash flows from financing activities mainly result from a capital increase that we conducted in June 2018. As you can see on the lower left-hand side, equity decreased by 4.4 million euros to 20.8 million euros. This change mainly results from the net loss of the year and the conducted capital increase. The equity ratio was 85.6% at the end of the year. The staff development is illustrated on the lower right-hand side compared to an average number of 33 employees in 2017. We had 39 employees on average in 2018. At the end of 2018, we had 40 employees. Finally, I would like to give an outlook for 2019. This year, our main focus is on the development program in Europe, first approval processes in the US and other regions, as well as the manufacture and supply chain for remimazolam. Regarding revenues, we expect these to amount to approximately 8 million euros, thereof 7.5 million euros in connection with the NDA filing in the US, and 0.5 million euros are related to the transfer of the Japanese filing dossier translated into English or transfer of the US filing dossier to our partner TRFA. Given the ongoing development activities, including the European Phase 3 study, we will continue to incur significant R&D expenses, which we estimate to be in a range of about 13 to about 15 million euros. SG&A costs will increase to approximately 4 to 5 million euros, mainly because of pre-commercial activities. Based on the estimate for the R&D expenses, we expect tax income from UK tax credits in the amount of approximately 2 million euros. In total, we expect a net loss in the amount of approximately 7 to 10 million euros. Regarding our liquidity, cash at hand, plus the expected milestone payment in connection with the NDA filing in the US and expected tax credits, secure a liquidity runway until approximately mid-2020 based on current planning. Until filing for market approval and general anesthesia in Europe, further funds of about 10 million euros will be required based on current planning. Now I hand back to you, Wolfgang.
Thank you very much, Abdel. I'd now like to highlight a few items on remimazolam. Of course, the most important part is the increased safety compared to current available alternatives, and the avoidance of hypotension is a real important thing. I will come back to this when we discuss general anesthesia, because hypotension is associated with increased mortality. On the other side, patient experience is becoming more and more important also for payers, and what we have learned already in the trials, specifically in bronchoscopy, is that relatives who have to accompany their patients appreciate the fact that patients are much more awake after the procedure when they drive them home than compared to being under midazolam. So it's not only improved efficiency in the hospital, it is also less burdensome for family members who are usually accompanying persons if you go for an intervention or drive you home. The next important thing in my view is the very good IP position that we have in important regions. The Bezalate salt protects us in the US at least until 2031. We have a formulation patent that has been granted for Europe and a dosing patent for Japan that gives us good market exclusivity in the key markets. We have shown very good safety in more than 2,400 patients by now. We already discussed the potential of indications, and I can only confirm that the results today have never been a disappointment when it comes to remimazolam. Let me now touch a little bit on the market size of the U.S., and here we focus only on the colonoscopy market in this situation, because this is the most concise market that you can address with a reasonable effort, because there are around 20 million GI procedures per year that are mostly performed outside of the hospital, and that will be the key target elements, because outside of the hospital, there are real factories who sometimes do up to 50 patients per day. And, of course, their efficiency is key. Overall, and I'd like to stress that the indication is not just colonoscopy, it is procedural sedation. And the total number of procedural sedation procedures in the U.S. are currently estimated to be more than 40 million. What makes us so confident that remimazolam will be a big success in the U.S. and other territories? This is based on the splendid results of the three phase three trials that we had performed in agreement and after discussions with the FDA. On the left side, you see the bronchoscopy trial, which was done in patients from AS grading from ASA1 to 3, meaning that a significant number of patients were quite sick, which is not unexpected for those patients. There were also more elderly than the one patients of the middle trial, the colonoscopy trial, in routine colonoscopy, which usually is done mostly in healthy patients. And on the right side, you see the result of very sick patients. ASA4 means that your disease is a constant threat to your life. And the nice thing about the results of the trial is that they look very similar between those very distinct patient populations, and that's very convincing, and I have not seen that many times in clinical development. So if we come back now to the monetary impact, the monetary impact is that with remimazolam you can do more procedures than with midazolam, and we have recently done some calculations for a typical Canadian setup where you have several people involved. You have three beds for colonoscopies. You have a wake-up room. And if you only look at the cost that I'm implied for the hospital, with remimazolam, by virtue of doing more patients, you can save $100 per patient by using the same resources. That does not include pricing for the drug, but at that savings, this seems to be irrelevant. And for the U.S., you can expect similar or even higher numbers. So the efficiency is the value proposition for procedural sedation. As I've said in the beginning, we are in the last steps of defining preparations, and we expect, based on COSMO guidance, that the filing will happen shortly. In the EU, we have recently had interactions with the European agencies, and based on a pre-submission meeting that we held in February, we now have received feedback that a filing based on the US data only is possible. That was somewhat surprising to some people, because usually there was the expectation that we would have to do an extra phase 3 trial in Europe. So now, overall, the timetable for approval in procedural sedation can be moved forward. We do not give any guidance at this moment in time on the exact timing, because first we have to come up now, establish a plan. You may know that there are also steps involved. We need to meet with rapporteurs and have their input on how they want the data to be presented. So there needs to be some preparatory work before we can give a clear guidance on timing. I assume that by the end of the first half year, we should be able to give a solid update on that situation. Now let me spend a few minutes on general anesthesia. There's been essentially not a lot of innovation in not only recent years, but I would say in recent decades. The point is that the aging population with increasing levels of comorbidity is much more sensitive to some of the side effects of anesthesia, and this is where remimazolam comes into play. The main differentiation is that there is significantly less hypotension associated with remimazolam as compared to propofol. And on the next two slides, I want to give you some impression on the importance of hypotension. There is a phenomenon described as MINS, that means myocardial injury during non-cardiac surgery. Because of the hypotension, there is not enough blood or oxygen transported to the heart, and that leads to subclinical type of infarction, which can be measured by a special enzyme. What has now been established is there's a direct correlation between the magnitude of hypotension and mortality. So this is why in our phase 3 trial, we're focusing to position remimazolam as an agent that has a significantly less hypotensive effect as propofol. We have seen that both in the cardiac surgery trial that we did and in the Japanese trial. And based on these data, we are performing this trial, and we expect that we can repeat those results. And in essence, this will reduce the side effects of anesthesia, specifically in the elderly patient population. Would you now look at the trial, which where you see that the primary objective is to show that the drug works as effective as propofol, and the secondary endpoint will be to show improved hemodynamic stability compared to propofol, which is exactly meaning we try to reduce the number of events where patients and the time where patients have significant hypotension. And when we talk about hypotension, we do not talk about blood pressure of 90 to 60. We talk about blood pressures which are significantly lower than this. On the next slide, you see, based on the data that were generated in the phase 3 trial in Japan, the significant reduction in the events of hypotension, mean arterial pressure below 60 millimeters mercury was 40% in ranibizumab and 70% in the propofol group, and our planning in the phase 3 trial assumes at least a difference of around 20% overall in hypotensive events of significance. This also leads to less requirements for vasopressors to be used to counteract this hypotension. Right now, it's not clearly established whether the vasopressor dosing is adding to the problem or whether it really can completely rule out problems associated with hypotension, but that's something for future research and not necessarily done with remimazolam. We also will have to look at the level of sedation, because it seems to be that too deep sedation and hypotension are somehow also correlated. And so also in our clinical trial, we try to keep the patients in a very well-defined corridor of sedation, which will be controlled and will also be part of the overall safety evaluation. As I've mentioned before, the problem of hypotension, of course, is higher in patients that are older and patients that have significant comorbidity. So therefore, number one, the trial is being performed in patients that already have significant comorbidities, meaning that these patients are usually elderly patients. And this, for now, it looks in Europe around 50%+ of all hospital patients who undergo surgery are 60+ or have a significant comorbidity, which is exactly how we want to position the drug in the launch phase. And we assume when we can establish that this is much safer in this very sick patient population, it will of course also be used for patients who are not that sick over time. ICU sedation, as I mentioned before, we have not done a formal development program. This is on the agenda maybe for 2020, 2021. We have data that give us confidence that it's worth and that remimazolam works. Also, hemodynamic stability is a key element that needs to be improved in patients who are on the ICU. We need additional funds for that, but as I said, this is not on our plan for 2019. We are working on the filings. We have to get ready to answer questions that come back from the filings. And as I said, mentioned earlier, we will assess the ability to file remimazolam in procedural sedation in advance of the German anesthesia submission. Where are we with our licensees? In Japan, we have filed for German anesthesia, and we expect to see the results of this in the year 2020, where we'll see to start revenues coming in and royalties for Pion. In South Korea, Hanapharm plans to file for market approval in 2020. Hanapharm is a public company. They also have announced that they
invest heavily in a production facility dedicated to remimazolam production. So there's a lot of effort behind this. In Russia, we have informed today that the market approval will happen by end 2019. In Turkey and the regions that are associated in the TAFA agreement, approval will be filed, NDA will be filed based on either Japanese or U.S. approvals. In Canada, we expect PharmaScience to give us notice soon about their filing plans. And in China, Yijiang has filed for procedural sedation in November 2018. We cannot give any guidance on when approval will be granted in China because there are not yet the same established kind of timelines that we know for either the EMA or the FDA. On slide 41 is a summary of our deals that we have done in the past. There's a total of 83 million euros outstanding in milestone payments, which are partially related to sales or related to regulatory milestones. The royalty rate depends, when the early deals were around 10% and the later deals are 20%+ royalty rates, which is pretty attractive and given the market potential gives some very interesting future revenue streams for PAION. So what are we expecting for 2019? So the next big thing will be filing for procedural sedation in the U.S. That will also trigger potential filings in other regions. We expect the completion of the European phase 3 by the end of the year. Potential approval in Japan could be either towards the end of the year or beginning of 21. Same for China, but with more caution because, as I said before, we don't have any time plan. Potential approval in the U.S. is routinely expected around 12 months after the filing. So this is how far we can look, and in parallel, as I said before, we assess our ability to file in due course for procedural sedation. On the general vision and positioning of the company, our current focus is really to launch in as many countries as possible in as many indications. The next step will be forward integration with the market, with a plan to market ourselves in selected European countries, with deal making for other parts of Europe and still outstandings Latin America and Southeast Asia. And of course, we understand that when we become more mature, it is necessary to add other products to our portfolio. We are working on this, but there's no acute things to be expected because that takes time and we need to be very careful what we do here. But the plan is that we work in this sequence. Filing is priority number one. Forward integration is the next step. And portfolio enrichment, we are working on this. This is also very opportunistic. If something pops up that's very attractive, we have to be ready to act. And we have an agreement with the supervisory board that this is the strategy going forward for PAION. Why forward integration? I'm often asked, why do you want to do this? I think if you offer a solid setup of a specialty pharma company in Europe, that will attract U.S. companies who usually do not want to deal with Europe to offer their products to be marketed. And a lot of these products are acute and critical care products. We think we can be an ideal partner for this. Therefore, this forward integration is also somewhat related to the portfolio enrichment because it increases our chances to get products that match very well with remimazolam. And the, I would say, the playing field that we have defined is acute and critical care. So everything that happens with the interventionalist in the emergency room, ICU, or OR. So this is, for me, the presentation, and I now hand back to Ralf.
Thank you very much, Wolfgang, and Abdel, for your presentation. And then we are ready to start the question and answer session.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you change your mind and wish to withdraw your question, please press star 2. You will be advised when to ask your question. The first question comes from the line of Dennis Holm from Edison. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my question. Firstly, I didn't quite catch what you said about the timing for procedural sedation. So can you clarify, do you see the potential to file for procedural sedation before general anesthesia in Europe?
Yes, clear yes. There's potential to file in advance of general anesthesia. However, we cannot give an exact, a more precise timeline because we first need to do our homework. We need to see how we can shift resources. We have in our financial plan, we have resources allocated for filing activities. So these will be moved forward a little bit. But we also need to discuss with our reference member states that there will be our rapporteurs first before we can give any clear guidance. So, as I said before, we assume it will be before general anesthesia, but no further details can be given at this moment in time.
Okay, thank you. And then just turning to the general anesthesia trial, can you just give us a little color about what your experience has been with the general anesthesia trial to date?
Well, the experience with the general anesthesia trial is that, it, as always, it takes some time before you have all sites ongoing. These days, negotiations on contracts with hospital administrations become more and more the roadblock to before you can start. Overall, the feedback from the sites that are active is very positive. We are also seeing that there have not been a lot of GCP trials being performed in the anesthesia space, so that means a lot of training is necessary to be compliant with the necessary regulations. So that's an extra mile that we have to go. We can also confirm the timeline that we will complete the recruitment by the end of the year. This is also a standing agenda with our supervisory board, who are as keen as we to finish this trial on time. In addition, the management, in addition to the clinical team, is traveling to meet sites in order to clarify if we can help with anything in order to enable the sites to perform the trial with the necessary staff. And clarify any questions. So that's why we are confident that we are okay with timing.
So what proportion of the sites are up and running at this stage?
Sorry, I didn't get this. Can you please repeat?
What proportion of the trial sites are up and running? It sounds like some of them aren't yet recruiting patients.
Well, I think we are not giving any precise numbers. All I can say, given where we are in the performance of the trial, this is what you would expect. You have most of the sites being active, and some sites you are still waiting to get the final signature. So this is a normal process in a clinical trial. Nothing special and nothing to really discuss in detail.
Okay, thanks for clarifying that. That's all the questions from me.
The next question comes from the line of Simon Schollers from First Berlin. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. I was wondering if you could comment on how the competitive dynamics in procedural sedation in Europe might differ from those in the US, given that the European market is more heavily oriented towards hospitals, and also given that in Europe colonoscopies aren't such a big factor as they are in the US.
Well, number one, I think what's nice about the situation in Europe that it's mostly controlled by anesthesiologists who define how this should be done. So we have very good experience to discuss how this product would be introduced. Anesthesiologists do not necessarily perform the procedure themselves, but they want to be in charge of defining the national guidelines and also in the hospitals, and they want to be responsible for the training and make sure that those who are using the drug are experienced enough to deal with any, you know, minor complications. So that's the very positive feedback that we have. There is, of course, a different other situations. Like, I give you an example. In the UK, there is a lot of patients that have elderly patients that have teeth extractions, and they occupy the seat as long as until they wake up. So there's a big need to bring in a drug with a shorter duration where they can do more patients. And the second part of this is these are mostly very old patients. Their last teeth is a big intervention, and then they cannot take dates because they need someone to bring them and to take them home. And if this is not available, sometimes these appointments are being canceled. So if with our offering of a drug that has very short onset, is very safe, I think we can address a lot of problems which are typically for Europe and not the US. So it's a completely different approach to the marketing. It is less focused probably on colonoscopies, but it is more a broader use in hospital situations where really you can do more patients with less resource consumption. So I think that's our value proposition in Europe. Does that help?
Yes, that's very helpful. Thanks very much.
Thanks.
The next question comes from the line of Thomas Schießler from Equities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for taking my question. Definitely it's a question on the procedural sedation issue. Dr. Zönken, if you just team up and accelerate the pace for the EU registration, is there enough financial funds besides the fact that organization must be trimmed towards the new timeline? Is there enough financial funds to make this quick path towards registration workable?
We have announced before that we seek additional 10 million for filing. This, of course, originally was the placeholder for general anesthesia. So part of can be used, of course, for procedural sedation. And if things go according to plan, general anesthesia will be following procedural sedation. And by then, we will be in a different situation because of the market approvals that we have seen by then in other countries and the respective milestones. But also, Abdel, maybe you can comment on the financial implications.
Yes, indeed. So the potential filing for procedural sedation does not require a significant incremental budget.
Mm-hmm.
The package, the data from the U.S. is already there, and the EMA confirmed that we can use this, so we will have to do some rewriting and formatting for European standards, but the incremental budget is not big. And then in terms of what comes after the filing, there might be some shifting of activities and costs before, because we have a shorter time to market. But as Wolfgang said, we are working on a plan to give some more details later.
So the weak share price is not has no background at this new developments concerning the way to or the way to the EU market.
Well, it should not. I mean, it's good news, so it should rather go the other direction. I mean, in general, we don't comment the share price. But we understand that one institutional investor in PAION needs to close its fund, and they might sell the shares on the market. As the stake is in PAION is below 3%, we assume this is a temporary effect.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Just a final reminder, please press star 1 to ask a question. We do have a question come through again from the line of Dennis Holm. Please go ahead.
Hello. Could you just, I guess, looking at the procedural sedation filing or potential filing in Europe, do you see any advantages in going first with procedural sedation rather than GA? I mean, I guess I'm imagining because it's a lower risk procedure, do you think that it would be a little easier to get approval in procedural sedation than general anesthesia?
Well, I mean, it has several advantages. I mean, number one, a year earlier in the market gives us earlier exposure to TOS to users. So, you know, this, in our view, will support the launch of general anesthesia and will involve less cost because we already can do some pre-marketing. We assume that the way the drug behaves based on the feedback from the U.S. users will be very positive. So that will help us to create the market access quickly. Whether or not the approval is less complicated compared to general anesthesia is very difficult to discuss right now. I think based on the discussions that we had with EMA, they believe that reducing hypotension would be a significant potential safety feature that's unique. So I think if we can show that we have the same, I would say, welcome attitude as we have for procedural sedation. But this, you know, this is only speculation. It's always, you have to go there, you have to submit the file and answer the questions. That will tell you how the reception will be. But I think in general, launching procedural sedation early is an advantage.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Just a final reminder, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad to ask a question. Okay, there are no further questions from the English-speaking participants, so I will hand you back to Ross Penner. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you very much, everybody, for your questions. Und wie angekündigt, würde ich dann jetzt mit dem Fragen- und Antworten-Teil in deutscher Sprache beginnen wollen. Wenn Sie Fragen haben, stellen Sie die bitte jetzt.
Sie haben jetzt die Möglichkeit, Ihre Fragen zu stellen. Bitte drücken Sie hierzu die Tastenkombination Stern 1 auf Ihrer Telefontastatur. Müssten Sie Ihre Frage wieder zurückziehen, drücken Sie bitte die Tastenkombination Stern 2. Noch einmal zur Erinnerung, falls Sie eine Frage stellen möchten, drücken Sie bitte die Tastenkombination Stern 1 auf Ihre Telefontastatur. Die erste Frage kommt von Stefan Bayer.
Hallo, hört man mich schon?
Alles gut, ja, Herr Bayer.
Es geht um Folgendes. Sie haben im Juli ein Pre-NDA-Meeting gehabt letzten Jahres und daraufhin hieß es, dass Cosmo den Zulassungsantrag stellen wird bis Ende Q4 18. Das sind 2 Quartale. Jetzt sind 3 Quartale vergangen. Das heißt 50% mehr Zeit und das wundert mich dann schon. Da stelle ich mir die Frage, inwiefern sozusagen Ihr Partner Cosmo mit dem notwendigen Blutdruck an der Sache arbeitet. Und da interessieren mich dann die Contract Details. Inwiefern haben Sie da Durchgriff darauf, dass auch die notwendigen Ressourcen da zum Einsatz gebracht werden, dass praktisch der Cosmo tatsächlich an der Zulassung arbeitet und nicht, sagen wir mal, intern, das ist ja eine größere Company, intern andere Projekte vorzieht und sozusagen Pion vergeblich warten wird, dass es da weitergeht. Und die zweite Frage, die ich habe, anscheinend reicht das Kapital bis Mitte 2020 und da standen 10 Millionen in Diskussion, die man eventuell brauchen wird. Nun bin ich Aktionär und was ich natürlich ungern sehen würde, ist eine Kapitalerhöhung. Mir wäre das lieber, dass Sie aufgrund sozusagen erster Umsätze wohl im nächsten Jahr das lieber kreditfinanzieren. Das war meine zweite Frage. Danke.
Ja, ich würde anfangen mit der mit Ihrer zweiten Frage, Herr Bayer. Das ist richtig, die Kassenreichweite ist bis Mitte 2020. Wir benötigen weitere Finanzmittel in Höhe von ca. 10 Millionen Euro bis zum Filing in der Generalanästhesie in Europa. Wie wir das finanzieren werden, haben wir noch nicht entschieden. Also da schauen wir uns auch das gesamte Spektrum an. Und das kann natürlich auch Eigenkapitalmaßnahmen bedeuten, aber es kann genauso auch andere Maßnahmen bedeuten. Sie sprachen Fremdkapital an, das schauen wir uns auch an. Also von daher gucken wir uns die ganze Weitbrandte an, aber wir haben noch nichts entschieden.
Zu der ersten Frage, die Ressourcen und die Arbeitsintensität bei Cosmo. Ich kann nur sagen, Cosmo hat mit Volldampf gearbeitet, mit uns gemeinsam. Dass es etwas länger gedauert hat, mag dem Umstand geschuldet sein, dass man das eben zu zweit machen musste und dass man manchmal auch dann Diskussionen hat, die eine Neubetrachtung einer Entscheidung oder einer Strategie bedeuten. Aber ich kann nicht sagen, dass Cosmo das Remimazolam vernachlässigt hat. Das ist für Cosmo ein wichtiges Produkt und deshalb legt Cosmo alle Ehrgeiz dran, auch die neu avisierte Zeitlinie zu halten, bis Ende des Quartals einzureichen. Das ist die Information, die wir von Cosmo haben. Und natürlich sehen wir, was Cosmo tut, weil wir ja immer die Dokumente nochmal zum Check bekommen. Also wir sehen, dass sie arbeiten. In den Verträgen können Sie erwarten, dass wir die üblichen Klauseln haben, die heißen Reasonable Best Efforts. Das heißt also, ein Aufwand, die dem möglichen Ertrag in sinnvoller Weise entspricht. Also das ist eine übliche Formulierung in Lizenzverträgen. Wir haben keine Veranlassung, heute zu sagen, dass Cosmo diese Reasonable Efforts nicht gemacht hat, sondern das war eine gemeinsame Anstrengung. Und wenn man gemeinsam als Team auftritt, dann muss man auch gemeinsam dafür die Prügel einstecken. Also an den Termin, der jetzt Ende dieses ersten Quartals ist Pion genauso mitverantwortlich wie Cosmo. Das ist eine gemeinsame Verantwortung, weil es ein gemeinsames Projekt war.
Ja, weil ich sehe es so, Sie haben Patente auf Ihr Remimazolam, das geht bis, je nachdem, bis 2031 oder 2033, je nachdem wo. Und jedes Quartal, das jetzt verstreicht, ohne Umsatz sozusagen, verringert hinten raus den entsprechenden Umsatz in Ihren Märkten, weil wenn dann im Prinzip die Nachahmerprodukte kommen, dann werden Sie auch Ihre Preise senken müssen. Sprich, der Aktionär sieht einfach nur, dass er verringerten Marktwert des Unternehmens zu realisieren hat.
Also natürlich ist das auch im Interesse von Cosmo und Pion, also den Mitarbeitern und den Aktionären, dass es möglichst schnell passiert, damit man möglichst schnell die Sales realisiert. Keiner hat ein Interesse daran, das langsamer zu machen. Deshalb bitte ich Sie davon auszugehen und zu verstehen, dass hier alle mit der größtmöglichen Konzentration und Fokussierung diesen Zulassungsantrag nach vorne gebracht hat.
Ja, dann danke für diese Stellungnahme und dann gehe ich davon aus, dass das so kommt und hoffe darauf, dass praktisch der Cosmo alsbald in den nächsten Tagen vermelden wird, dass er den Zulassungsantrag gestellt hat. Und ansonsten wünsche ich weiterhin viel Glück und danke für die Bemühungen und auch die Auskünfte.
Ihnen auch vielen Dank. Sie sind der erste deutsche Teilnehmer, der den Mut hatte, mal in dieser Konferenz auch eine Frage zu stellen. Das finde ich sehr begrüßenswert, weil wir bieten das ja an, um möglichst transparent zu sein und denjenigen, die nicht so gut im Englisch sind, auch die Möglichkeit zu geben, sich da zu artikulieren. Dafür bedanken wir uns und wir hoffen, Sie dann auch unsere HV zu sehen.
Ja, ich bin ja schon länger Aktionär und habe auch oft teilgenommen an diesen Veranstaltungen, an den Telekons, und ich habe mich einfach entschlossen, mich da aktiver zu betätigen. Also herzlichen Dank nochmal.
Danke Ihnen.
Nochmal zur Erinnerung, falls Sie eine Frage stellen möchten, drücken Sie bitte die Tastenkombination Stern 1 auf Ihre Telefontastatur. Wir haben keine weiteren Fragen und somit übergebe ich das Wort zurück an Ralf Penner für abschließende Worte.
Ja, auch dafür ein herzliches Dankeschön. Again, thank you very much for joining us for Payon's earnings call on the financial results of 2018. I hope that we have been able to answer your questions, but please feel free to give me a call afterwards. If you would like to listen to this call again, please visit our website where the replay MP3 will be available later today. For now, I say goodbye and thank you very much for your continued interest in Payon.
Thank you for joining today's conference call. You may now replace your handsets.